This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everyone. Glenn the Geek here, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning for September the 15th, episode 1520. We're still on vacation, but we'll be back live on Monday the 19th. Don't forget about the listener meetup this Saturday. That's the 17th at the Colorado Horse Park. Jen and I will be there, along with Christy Landwehr, supposed to be there from the Certified Horsemanship Association. It is Cross Country Day at the fall event there at the Colorado Horse Park, and it's also their family festival day. We're hoping to meet at 10 a.m. at the festival tent. Look for more details on the Hit'em Facebook page as we find out more ourselves. We hope to see you there. Today I have for you episode 3 and 4 of the Messengers podcast about the making of the movie The Messengers. If you did not listen to yesterday's episode with part 1 and 2, I recommend listening to that first. My podcasting friend Dave Jackson has done a wonderful job with this series, and you're going to hear episode 3 today, and I recommend a Kleenex box nearby. And as a side note, the Neil you hear about in these episodes is our editor, Neil. He edits our shows. I hope you enjoy this. Tomorrow, we'll have a best of really bad ads for you that Jen put together. So you're going to have a little fun with that tomorrow as well. Now, The Messengers.
Previously on The Messengers podcast, we had started the story of Sean Smith, a professional musician, now missionary, who podcasts from Guatemala. He had asked executive producer Chris Kremitzos if he could bring the documentary film crew to Guatemala to film Sean doing his podcast from Guatemala. There was a very, very small window of time to fit through. Executive producer Chris Kremitzos got Sean on a phone call.
We jumped on a call and he said, we're going to make this work somehow. Neil's in LA right now, but filming Danny Pena, actually. He said, we're going to make this work. The guys really want to do it. I want to make this happen. Let's do it. And I thought, okay, they're going to come for a day, which would be amazing. They came for 5 days and we were able to capture some amazing footage. The drone got through customs. We were all worried, is the drone going to get through customs? You know, this is a developing country. You just never know. He walked right through with this giant smile on his face, and he and Sala were like kids on Christmas morning. It was awesome.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Messengers podcast. I'm your host, Dave Jackson, from theschoolofpodcasting.com. This podcast gives you a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the making of the documentary movie, The Messengers. If you haven't listened to the previous episodes, I strongly encourage you to go to themessengersdoc.com/podcast and check out the 2 previous episodes, as well as subscribe in iTunes. This week, we're going to get the behind-the-scenes stories of Guatemala. Filming the shoot, as well as the nuances of filming in a poverty-stricken country, and how do you get the story while maintaining the dignity of your subjects. But before we get to the trip, last week we met Sean Smith. How did Sean end up in Guatemala? He had participated in a mission trip to India, but he admits himself he didn't see himself as a missionary.
So I had been on 2 mission trips to India, and I never intended to go to India. Someone invited me to go, asked me to pray about it, which I had no desire to go to India. I mean, some people are born wanting to go learn another language, live in a jungle, eat bugs, that kind of thing. That was never me. I said, I think he got the wrong guy. And they said, this is a brother in Christ. They said, would you just pray about it? And I'm like, these Christians with the praying thing, you know? So I did, I prayed about it. And 3 weeks later, I called him back and I said, I think I'm supposed to go to India. And he said, yeah, that's what we were thinking too. And so on a plane ride back, I prayed a very small prayer. Lord, please help me find someplace closer that I might be able to go every year. At the time, Dave, I was a Christian musician, actually full-time Christian musician, touring youth gatherings and concerts at churches. And so I was in front of literally tens of thousands of people every year who really wanted to do something about helping children living in extreme poverty, but they just didn't have a path, a trusted face, or something to do. And when I came back from India, I really felt called to make a mission trip an annual part of my ministry, to somehow invite people that I'm in front of every week to come share this experience with me and help make a difference. And I was talking about India that week, and this lady came up to me after my talk, and she said, you know, I work with children, actually orphans, in Guatemala. And since you're a missionary, I was wondering if you could help me put together a mission to Guatemala. And I'm, you know, after my first question of where's Guatemala, my second question was, I'm not exactly a missionary. Like, I mean, I've been on a mission, but I don't know how to put a mission together. Like, I know nothing about this. And she said, I kid you not, hand to God, she said, would you please pray about it? You know, and I'm like, oh. I did. I called her back 3 weeks later and I said, I think I'm supposed to go to Guatemala. And she said, great. Me and my family are going over Christmas break. I sent out an email to a whole bunch of people on my mailing list saying, I'm not going to India. I'm going to Guatemala. It's south of Mexico. It's only a day's trip instead of 3 days trip. It's only 1 hour time difference. It's actually mid 70s year round because it's 5,000 feet elevation, and it will only cost a fraction of the amount of money going to India. And so that first year, I had 53 people say, okay, I'll go with you. And that was 11 years ago. For the past 11 years, we've hosted, over the past 11 years, we've hosted now 1,500 team members, ages 7 to 77, all volunteers. My wife and I are volunteers. And we've served literally thousands and thousands of children living in extreme poverty. And so it's been this unbelievable journey from this person who never wanted to go. I never dreamed of going, but I just couldn't sleep at night after someone asked, can you help?
Now, in episode 2, we learned how Sean had become a mobile pro recording expert. And when you connect with Sean, you kind of never know what you're going to get. So I'm assuming then you are in Guatemala as we speak.
I am. I'm actually in a closet at a hotel room in Guatemala. And it's this funky, there's not a whole lot of clothes here because we're obviously living out of a suitcase. So everything that I'm speaking to you on right now fit in my backpack and went through customs without any problem here in Guatemala.
If you've listened to the previous two episodes, you see where these messengers are always coming up with another idea.
So John Dennis and I have been friends for several years now.
I'm John Dennis.
John Dennis manages the Podcasters Hangout, the largest Facebook group dedicated to podcasting.
And we met through podcasting. We actually live close by in South Florida, and I'm blessed to be able to hang out and meet with him and Paul on a pretty regular basis. Well, after Salo and Neil and Chris said, yes, they're coming, I said, man, it would be great to have John here. Not only is John a good friend, which I was thinking this would just be great to have another podcasting friend here with me during this experience, but John had wanted to come down to the mission and check it out. And John also happens to be a pilot and happens to also own the exact same drone that Neil owns. And I thought, wow, you know, I know that the drone was new to Neil and that he and John had talked earlier about if Neil ever needs kind of a tricky shot, that John would make himself available to help them get that shot if they were in Florida, for example. So I thought, look, this is nuts, but not any more nuts than asking a film crew to come to Guatemala. So I might as well ask John, you know. So in less than 2 weeks, no, I think a week and a half's notice, I sent an email to John and said, this is crazy, man. I know. And you're super busy. His business is growing like crazy and he's super busy. I said, is there any way you could come down for a day or two?
And so he said, you know, these guys are heading down and I would love it. I would be honored if you could come and help. You know, I had, it was this thing where everything that I had going on for the last couple months was converging on this week. Nice. Oh man. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have so many things going on. Everything's just converging right now in business. Let me see what I can do. And I got off, Facebook. I left that conversation thinking there's no way, like there's just no way I'm going to be able to make time. And so I just started thinking about, Sean's name of his mission is Now Is the Time. We had a conversation over lunch, a couple months before this, and we're talking about how his name came to fruition. And he was telling me at this lunch meeting, he said, you know, everyone's always telling me how, you know, it's just not a good time. There's so much going on. Kids are in school. They got all these after school programs and businesses, you know, this, and everything's so busy in life. And he looked at me and said, the thing is it's never a good time. And this conversation, as soon as I ended that Facebook conversation, we kind of hung up on the internet with each other. I started thinking about the conversation we had over lunch a few months back. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to really try hard to make this happen. So I started contacting some of my clients who I had some obligations to be fulfilled that week, started letting them know, and they were super supportive of it. And it happened.
So the crew arrived in Guatemala. Neil shares his first impressions.
So when I get there, he says, we'll be right there with a sign, you can't miss us. So when we walked out, there was nobody there. Now the weather was gorgeous. It was like California, like 69 degrees at night, beautiful. And we're out there for a while. Everyone's asking us, do you want to make a phone call? Do you want to make a phone call? Do you want to ride? And it started to get thicker and thicker. I see nobody waiting for us. There's no sign for us. And I started to get nervous because a good while went by and it was starting to get rainy. But it was kind of scary just because outside of the barricade, you also see the armed people with shotguns. And I had read online on the U.S. Embassy page to be careful because the people who check your bags call the people outside and tell them to rob you because they know what's in your bag. So they were like, don't walk past the barricade without your whoever's there to pick you up. And I thought we were going to have to walk past the barricade and ask the bus driver how to get to Sean. And all of a sudden I hear someone whistle, and it was John Dennis and stuff. And they had a sign that said, for you. The sign said award-winning filmmakers. And the other one for John said genius marketer. Exit to exit 19.
One way to avoid standing out was to ride the chicken bus.
The chicken bus is a bus in Guatemala that has music, lots of stickers, American cartoons all over the ceiling, and a lot of Jesus memorabilia. And they play, yeah, all over, the Virgin Mary, all this stuff. And they're playing live music, and it's really like a locals taxi, but it's a giant bus. And the reason that Sean has the missionaries ride on these buses is because it's very unassuming, and people that work who want to rob you, they won't look for an American on the chicken bus because it's mainly ridden by locals and people that don't have much money. So it's like great camouflage. Most missions, when you get there, you see these beautiful RVs that they rented or really expensive looking buses, and they're the first ones that get targets. So we rode that bus to sort of just look like we're part of the tapestry of where we are.
Did you guys have to drive up like some mountains that didn't have like any guardrails?
Oh my God, yeah, not only that, but the buses can barely go up these, and the guys run the buses so close to the edge of the ravines. I also saw a guy with a motorcycle hit the ravine and literally hit the ravine as we were going to the airport. And I was like, aren't we gonna stop to help this guy? But there was already some other dude pulling over with a light, you know? Kind of like Chris's story where the other guy went outside.
So if you hit this ravine, like how far of a drop are we talking
about? Oh, you're on a mountain. I think Sean said it was 7,000 feet elevation. Like, we're up there. Yeah. The buses could hardly go up the hills. But it was beautiful, man. Really cool experience to see the music and everything. And the drivers, they look like bodyguards. They get robbed very frequently, according to Sean. So
watch out. Vehicles stopped.
Just neat. I don't know. Even though that little bit of threat and fear kind of made it fun. You know, like, I hate to say, a little bit of excitement in the unknown, maybe?
But this would be different than shooting Danny Pena at a gamer convention or Glenn the Geek on his ranch. This is filming people living in poverty.
You just go and turn on the water in your house and you put your glass under it and you take a drink. That's impossible for the families we're serving here. They don't even have running water. They have to hike half mile to 2 miles to get water, and it's not pure. Then they have to boil it. And to not walk into a home filled with smoke because it rains 5 months out of the year and they have to cook over an open fire, not even gas or electricity. It's literally a campfire in the middle of their room.
I got there. The first day was weird because I was processing everything. I was taking it all in and I was looking around. And I was thinking, geez, is this really a place? Like, people really live like this. It feels like we're back 100 years. You know, some places had electricity, but no one had running water. And I, you know, it was just surreal. You know, we went to this one woman's house who she was in her 70s, must have been in her 70s. And we arrived and she was so grateful and happy to see the team who was putting themselves arrive. And she introduced us to her mother, who must have been like in her 90s. She was just this feeble old woman and she was blind. This woman told a story about how her mother was blind because of the smoke that would billow up in their home because of these open flame sort of things that they'd have to cook over. And all the soot and the ash would get in your eye, and over time, women would go blind.
Typically, volunteers go through extensive training. We didn't have time for that. Here's Sean.
But I sat Neil and Salo down before we went out to the village, and I said, I need to share something with you. I said, it's really important for us to preserve their dignity. No matter what we do today, the most important thing that we do is to preserve their dignity. So if you feel like it's uncomfortable, if you get the sense that the cameras or filming the audio, anything is making people uncomfortable, we're just going to set everything down and we'll get another shot some other time. It's not worth hurting them in any way, shape, or form, or making them feel uncomfortable. The amazing thing about Neil and Salo was that they both speak Spanish. And so they were able to actually interview some of the people that we were serving in their native language, which, you know, I'm just, I got goosebumps here just talking about this. And it was so emotional for me because I speak Spanish, but I'm not a native speaker like they are. And they were able to fluently and compassionately, sensitively ask questions like, how does it feel to receive this new stove today, or this new concrete floor, or these new shoes for your child? And they were able to do it in a way that made the family members feel very comfortable and not intrusive, and above all, to preserve their dignity.
Not only were they there just filming, they were checked in. You know, they were fully immersed. They were committed not just to these beautiful shots. They were committed to the entire experience. So, you know, we're out there and visiting these different locations to get, you know, some of this footage for, you know, whether it was for putting in stoves or installing these chimneys or laying these, you know, cement floors, serving some of these children with some of the donations and giving them outfits and shoes to wear, you know, participating in the VBS, the Vacation Bible Study stuff. And, you know, they were there every step of the way. You know, they participated fully, which was really cool because, you know, a lot of filmmakers, they're like, yeah, we'll get the shot and then we're heading back to the hotel and we're going to veg out, get ready for tomorrow. But they would participate fully and they had their cameras rolling like at every minute to make sure that they weren't going to miss anything. And then when the cameras were off and they were back in their room, they didn't like pop them open and pull out an SD card and like geek out over what the footage. I mean, we did that later on at night, but no, they put their cameras back and then they participate in everything else that was going on, you know, whether it was worship or dinner or some sort of discussion that we were having as a group up on the terrace of the hotel. I mean, they were there the whole time. Got to give those guys credit for that, because not only were they, again, committed to the shots, to the footage and everything, but also to the entire experience. And I've just never seen filmmakers do that before.
So what was a typical day like in Guatemala?
Let's see. When we arrived, Neil and Salo arrived at night. So they got to the hotel about 11 o'clock at night. And I said, you guys said you wanted to really see what we do with the mission. And I got to warn you, we get up pretty early, because if the rain comes, it's going to come about 3 o'clock. This is the rainy season. And so we try and get, you know, a day's worth of work done before that. So I said, breakfast is at 6, bus leaves at 6:30 sharp on the dot. And we won't get back here till about 5 o'clock. You know, is that really what you guys want to do? And they're like, yeah, we're all in. Yeah. So they did. Now, of course, you know, they're all excited. So they spend half the night talking. So they get like 2-3 hours sleep, maybe. So, but sure enough, breakfast, six o'clock, they roll into the dining hall, very blurry eyed, but excited, you know, just pumped up on adrenaline. And they went and got their gear. We jumped in the pickup and we went to the first house. So we're on site at 7 a.m. and walked down to the first site. And I said, so this is called Buena Vista. A beautiful view, but that means the reason it's so beautiful is because it's on this mountain. And to get to the homes, we have to do a little hiking. And like, yeah, whatever, you know, we're here, you know, let's do this thing. And these guys are doers. I mean, they truly, I think as Neil says, doers do. So the first house, we first went downhill. It's a really intense hill. I mean, a hill where you almost have to hold, you know, put a hand down in order to steady yourself. It's that steep. We walk down that hill. We walk along the ridge of the top of another hill. And then we have to hike up a hill. And this is all dirt. And I mean, you're literally grasping onto small trees to pull yourself up. I mean, it's slippery. It had just rained the night before. And these guys are hiking up. I go first and I look back down and they're just like panic stricken. Like, what did we get ourselves into? I mean, the look on their faces were just like, where is he taking us and how are we going to get back? And so we get up, they take their shots, do the amazing shots. And I said, okay, you guys ready for the next house? And they're like, so it's Neil, especially. He's like, we got to do that hill again. I said, no, not that hill. We'll do another hill. He's like, this is going to be a day of hills, right? And I said, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, all right, man, I lost 87 pounds this past year. My wife is going to love this, but you know, this is not what I signed up for. This was not in the brochure. You know that, right? And I said,
now, we've known all along that filmmaker Salo Zayas is a great filmmaker. He's a great editor. We had no idea he was a track star.
There are these small personal taxis called tuk-tuks. It's a little motorcycle that will seat three people in the back, and it's got a metal covering with a canvas top. So we were out filming in the city of Antigua, and they have these personal taxis, these tuk-tuks. And Neil was watching the screen of the drone, and Salo actually was holding the drone. So the drone wasn't being operated on its own power. Salo was actually holding it and walking around with it.
And I thought Salo was just going to let one pass him up and he just kind of pan left to right. But what does he do? He screams for me to record and he starts to run after a tuk-tuk. Well, hello, this driver sees a man holding a UFO chasing him. And let me tell you, Salo can run. Okay. I thought he was going to eat it on the cobblestone floor. Okay.
Takes off running like, I mean, like 90 to nothing. Like he's the roadrunner behind this tuk-tuk in the sky. You could see him looking back. He turns his head, he's looking back, like freaked out. Like, what is this guy doing? What is this guy holding? And I mean, he booked it. And Sean and I are in the corner. We are cracking up. And Neil's kind of, you know, chasing behind him to make sure he's getting the shot. And
as soon as it zipped right by me, I gunned it and just chased it down. And I think the guy was like super scared because he like revved the engine and just booked it. And I damn near fell. I was not expecting to actually film that without falling. I was lucky I didn't, but
Sean and I look at each other and we're like, man, they will literally do anything for the shot. They're truly world-class filmmakers.
The second fun story was on one of our last days, Sean decides to actually feed us real food. And he says, let's go eat at this amazing restaurant. So we walk down the street to where the beautiful Candelaria ruins are. And we catch a tuk-tuk. three of us squeezed like sardines. You know, I'm not a light guy. I'm 250 plus pounds. Okay. And we're in there and it was an amazing ride. We bumped all over the place on the cobblestone roads. The guy cut in and out of traffic. He cut people off. He honked and let everybody know that he had to be first, and he got us to our destination. And I'd never ridden in anything like that. You know, it's always the comfort of my own car. And let me tell you, the rest of the world lives so differently, but I can see why they have so much joy on their face, because even getting around is fun. The tuk-tuks are to me just a descriptive way of how they have gotten so creative with their limited funds and limited resources to move around still, to compete with taxis. They're basically like the mini Ubers of Antigua. I had a blast riding on it. Look for it in the film. You'll love to see the footage. And let me tell you, when next time you're in Guatemala, make sure you ride a tuk-tuk.
Well, chasing tuk-tuks will have you working up quite an appetite. What was the food like?
You know, we're Americans. We're used to pretty much being able to eat whatever we want, whenever we want, any time during the day. And, you know, we're working. I mean, we're not laboring every single minute of the day or anything, but we're out working, you know, and I'm used to sitting in an office all day, and Neil's sitting in front of a computer editing stuff all day. And so, you know, this is a pretty active experience. We're out there, we're actively shooting, we're actively involved, we're actively participating. And so with all this activity, you know, you get a little more hungrier than you normally do. So, you know, breakfast is cool, because breakfast, you get this big buffet. Well, it's not a big buffet, but you've got some choices. You got some fruit, you got eggs, you got this black bean, sort of like these almost like refried beans, but not, they're homemade. It's delicious. And then you get out and you start working, and by 12 o'clock, you're starving. I mean, you're hungry. You know, we're eating breakfast at 6 a.m. and and the hotel was preparing our meals for us. And they slapped this one tiny little piece of protein on this big, thick bread, because down in Guatemala, bread is the staple. That's what everyone's used to having. And Americans, we load our, you know, we eat these big subs, and we're piling meats and cheeses and all these toppings on it. And that's how we eat our sandwiches. Down there, bread is the main thing. And so, you know, we have a decent meal. I mean, it's not that it's scarce or anything. It's a good meal. I mean, there's some sides and we got fruit and everything. And we get back, so we eat lunch, and we get back and we have dinner, and dinner, you know, you're served a portion. You know, we're all sitting around these tables, and it's great because we're all back. Most of us have showered up before dinner. We're refreshed, and we're sort of sharing the stories of the day with one another. Your meal is delivered to you right in front of you, you know, and oftentimes these are smaller portions than you're used to, you know? So Neil and I, we look at each other, and Neil looks at me, he's like, bro, I could eat like four more of these. And I looked at him, I was like, I could too, man. And we're actually sitting there thinking about, like, oh, do we ask him? Can we ask him if we, like, do we go and say, like, hey, do we get another portion, you know? And so we didn't, because, you know, the culture is that, you know, this is what you're serving, you know, it's, you don't eat heavy during the dinner time, you know? And so, but it was a little bit of an adjustment for us, because we're big guys, you know, we eat, we're Americans, and we were participating in these active, you know, things throughout the day. And it was just a wonderful experience. It culturally is different. And so there's a lot of those cultural differences, those sort of stark contrasts. And that was one of them.
And we have dinner at 6. We worship as a community together at 7. 8 o'clock, we have small groups. We break into a leader team group meeting. And then people are usually in bed by 9, because it's just an exhausting day.
So after it was all over, how did the people feel about being filmed?
People felt incredibly honored to be filmed, and that the filmmakers would feel that this story is an important enough story to be included in the film. It was a very humbling feeling and very hopeful feeling that wouldn't it be wonderful if more people would feel inspired to come serve,
right,
in a developing country someplace? So
at the end of an exhausting day, Neil and Salo didn't go to sleep. No, they were cataloging all the video that they had shot.
So it was 10:15 at night. And Neil came down off the roof, which is where they did all of their editing. They just loved it up there, because you see three volcanoes and one of them's active. So they just watched that thing all night long. So Neil came down, it was about 10:15 at night, and he said, Sean, he said, do you think that some of the team members would like to see, you know, some of the footage that we shot today? And I said, well, I'm sure they would, but they're probably in bed. I mean, it's pretty late. And he's like, yeah. He said, okay, well, that's fine. I said, well, let me ask, you know, I'll just put the word out and, you know, let's use the plasma. We've got this giant plasma in the conference room. He's like, all right, I'll meet you there. So I shared with a couple of our leaders who were still awake. I said, spread the word. Neil wants to show some of the footage if anybody's interested. It's not, you know, a requirement if anybody's interested. 5 minutes later, all 38 team members were sitting in that conference room. They could not wait to see because, you know, we just heard about this 2 weeks earlier and now they were coming. And so you could have heard a pin drop when he was showing the drone footage. It was just absolutely spectacular. One of our team members was sitting right in front of me during the viewing and she turned around with tears in her eyes and she said, Sean, this is going to change lives. Mm. And she's right, Dave. I think this is going to truly change lives.
We've heard a lot about Salo and Neil in this episode, and you might be wondering, what was the motivation behind these two filmmakers to get up and operate and work on almost zero sleep? These last two stories answer that question.
But this is something that really moved me about Neil and Salo. So, as you know, Neil and Salo come from Hispanic backgrounds. So Salo, his parents were born in Cuba. I think Salo was born in Cuba and came to this country at a very young age. Neil was born and raised in Venezuela and came when he was very, very young from Venezuela. So not only do these guys both speak Spanish fluently, but they also have an appreciation for the culture. Because this is really where their parents came from developing countries in Latin America. And so the end of our first day, you know, these guys were like kids on Christmas morning. They were so excited. Oh, dude, look at that volcano. Oh, my gosh, look at that lady carrying that thing on her head. I mean, these were amazing shots that they could not get in the U.S., which is one of the reasons I wanted to invite them here, because I knew it would really add to the film the textures and the culture that you just, it's not the U.S., right? So they were just like screaming girls all day. I mean, just like so excited. Oh, I got this shot. Oh, dude, look at this. And they'd be showing each other on their cameras. I'm driving them around in the pickup. They're in the back seat. John Dennis and I are in the front seat. And I'm trying to stay on the road because I'm watching them through the rearview mirror, just sharing all this excitement and enthusiasm about this experience. And it was towards the end of the day, and then it got quiet, just absolutely silent. And I kind of look in the back, I look through the rearview mirror, and I'm thinking they finally crashed. You know, the adrenaline's worn off, they're sleeping like babies. And they're both just staring out the window. And I said, wow, it's really quiet back there. And Neil said, yeah. And Salo said, yeah. I said, you guys okay? And Neil said, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. He said, well, I don't know what Salo's thinking, but he said, you know, we just passed that outdoor market. And he said, it just reminded me of the stories that my parents used to talk about in Venezuela. And Salo said, dude, I was thinking the same thing. He said, really? He said, yeah. Salo said, I don't know if you know Neil, but he said, my mom used to make shoes in Cuba. She used to make shoes and sell them in the market. And I was thinking that could have been my mom. That could have been me. Those kids with their moms selling stuff in the street, that could have been me. But our parents came to the U.S. to give us a better life. And how blessed are we? And Neil agreed. He said, dude, we are just so incredibly blessed. They had this very personal experience with just coming here, with just being in Guatemala. It touched their heart in a way I could never anticipate. I mean, I had no idea. But I'd seen this before time and time again, and it was my hope and prayer that this experience could touch them so that they could share this experience with others through the film. And I really believe that's going to happen because that was day one.
And man,
even though they were dead butt tired, the next day they got up the next day at six and the next day at six and went all day and all night with everything they had, just full on out 100% to capture this story and share this message. And so I've told people, I said, you are so blessed to have these messengers be the messengers of the messengers, the filmmakers, these filmmakers, because they have huge hearts and they're going to tell an amazing story that is going to inspire millions.
There was one other story, one other moment that touched everyone around it, everyone who saw it, and especially Neil, who started off filming it.
So we got to one of these homes and it was an elderly woman. She was a widow. She had lost her husband. She didn't have her children living nearby. And she had this shack of a kitchen where it was just absolutely pitch black on the inside from smoke, you know, for years and years that had filled this room and filled her lungs and her eyes. And so we were there to install a stove.
She started talking to Neil and they were speaking in Spanish. I remember panning left and I looking up this little hill and I saw Neil and he was locked into this woman. They were speaking again in Spanish, but they were just locked in conversation.
I could see in her eyes that there was something that she wanted to tell me. Like, I wanted to interview her and ask her simply just, how do you feel getting this stove? How do you feel that someone in the world cares about you and is here to help you? But I could tell she knew I knew Spanish. The rest of the crew really didn't. Sean speaks it very well, but she could tell that I was, you know, Latino and that I would be able to maybe hear her plight, maybe be a shoulder to talk to. And so as I interviewed her, you know, her eyes watered up and I'm looking at her through my viewfinder, and you know, I can't help but get a little choked up because she stared at me for a long time, and it was like she was seeing right through me, but I was seeing her through a viewfinder in a bit of an impersonal way. And then she tilted my camera down and she says to me in Spanish, I want you to make this movie and tell your story, not because I want a stove, not because I want charity, but because I want the cavalry to come and save my grandson. And you know Spanish. And so please, mijo, tell our story so people will help us. So he won't die in this, you know, home. And so that well beyond this stove, they'll just help him have a better life. And as she said that to me, she gave me a hug and a kiss. She doesn't know me. She doesn't know if I could help her at all. And I'm still affected by that. I've been back over 2 weeks. And I'm so honored to tell her story. So honored to direct this movie. And I beg of my crew and Chris to help me deliver the message for the world. Not to go to Guatemala and help the poor and go for your little week and then go back to your immensely blessed lives. But to care about everybody else in the world that's living like she is. And you know, I haven't really let it go until now. And the way she looked at me. And so the other day I was looking at the footage, and when I watched it, it took me right to that second. It literally felt like I was looking right at her again. And I'm just honored. And this movie has changed me. And I realized that my daughter has it way too good. And I haven't complained since I got home about not having fresh water or worrying that someone will come and rob me because I don't have doors in my home. And I just want the cavalry to help her. And I'll leave it at that. All right, that's it.
This episode featured commentary from John Dennis, who runs the Podcasters Hangout, the largest Facebook group dedicated to podcasting, our awesome filmmakers Neil Gallarte and Salo Zayas, and Sean Smith from Now Is the Time for Missions.com. If you would like to help us finish this film, please visit right now. Go to supportthemessengers.com and donate any amount you can. I'm Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting asking you, what's your message?
Dr. Rose's Remedies Skin Treatment Salve and Spray are 100% all-natural products. They are anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal. Dr. Rose's are made with all human-grade ingredients and are safe and effective for treatment for all manner of cuts and scrapes on your horse. And Dr. Rose's is the must-have product here at the Horse Radio Network headquarters to keep PT Scooter's delicate white pasterns free from dew poisoning and scratches. Ask for Dr. Rose's at your local tack store or feed supplier, or visit them online at drrosesremedies.com. That's drrosesremedies.com.
Welcome to episode 4 of The Messengers. I'm your host, Dave Jackson, from theschoolofpodcasting.com. I want to thank everyone who's been providing feedback on the podcast. Episode 3 really hit home for some people, and I strongly urge you, if you are new to the show, go to themessengersdoc.com/podcast and check it out. Also, if you would like to contribute to the documentary, our crowdfunding is live and we really need your support. So please contribute any amount at supportthemessengers.com. That website again, supportthemessengers.com. Now, in today's episode, while the crew is happy to come home to their families, getting through customs isn't the only hurdle in front of them.
So I saw a lot of things in Guatemala. I saw things that I feel can't be unseen. Things I really wasn't prepared to see. You know, you hear these stories and people tell you how hard people have in other, you know, third world developing countries. And it's so easy to just kind of be blasé about it and just say, yeah, I get it. Poor them. Just go right back to the grind and with what you're doing. And so I wasn't prepared to experience what I experienced. I wasn't prepared to see what I saw.
Because of his experience, Sean Smith has stressed the importance of cultural training to help reduce reverse culture shock. And we need to keep in mind that while the crew is flying around and they're capturing footage, participating with the activities, and getting very, very little sleep, they're also trying to take care of their regular day job from across the planet using hotel Wi-Fi. Well, sometimes things just get skipped, and in the case of John Dennis, he didn't hear about reverse culture shock. So John was going from doing mission work to being baptized by fire. So what you're about to hear is Sean describing what reverse culture shock is, and you'll hear John's real life experiences.
We talk about cultural training and what is called reverse culture shock. When people go back to the U.S. after they've been serving in a developing country, even on short-term missions, because it can be quite dramatic.
We got to the point where the stove was built. And she was trying to help with everything. The stove was built. It was time to light the fire. And she took her machete and she goes out. We need wood, you know, so she goes out and, she takes this block of wood. She takes her machete and she's just chopping away. She's kneeling. She's doing a squat. This 70 something old woman. She's like doing a squat, holding the block with her left hand, taking the machete in her right hand. And she's swinging this. And you're like, oh my gosh, here's this 70 something old woman who's just like working her ass off to just come up with this wood so we could start this flame, this fire for a stove. And so that was a moment where I thought, geez, thought about my own mother actually, who's in her 70s. And and just the conviction, the excitement. She got her wood cut and handed the wood over, and she said, "Uno momento, one minute, please." And she said, "Uno momento, por favor." She goes around the corner, she disappears, and she walks just a couple minutes later. We're like, we want to show her how to light the stove. And she comes back around the corner, and she's got three bottles of water that she had like her kid to go buy. So these people who live in these villages, on average, they're making $1.25 per person per day or less. To get a bottle of water costs them oftentimes over a day's worth of work for just a bottle of water. It's very expensive for them. And she went and got three bottles of water for the stove team that was building the stove. And I had this massive smile on my face. I was like, oh my goodness, this is so sweet. And I look around and everyone else is kind of looking down and they're just kind of ho-hum. And they're like, ah. And I look at Sean Smith and I say, well, what, why the sad faces? And he looks at me and says, we really don't like them to do this because this is, that's a good 3-4 days of work right there for her. And that's the situation. Those are the things I saw. Right after that home, we went to another home. There was a woman who, this was a tough one. This was an emotional one for me. She lost her husband recently widowed. She has 6 daughters. Her daughters slept in this room that was, had a dirt floor and had a little tiny bit of hay on it. And anyways, anytime it would rain, which is like 5 months out of the year in Guatemala, this room would become this mud slurry. They were on kind of this hill, this slope, and it was just the way the water would run. So she really needed a concrete floor in that room. And so the team was putting in a concrete floor, and she got really emotional towards the end when she realized what was really happening. She was getting a floor. And I 2 weeks ago, before this trip, my son spilled some juice on our carpet. And I got so angry. And I yelled at him and I was like, Connor, what are you, you're always spilling things. Come on, man. He's 4 years old. That flooded me because there was this woman who was crying for joy because her 6 daughters were now going to be able to sleep on a concrete floor. And, that was a sobering moment, probably the most sobering moment for me.
It can be quite dramatic. And I felt terrible that I didn't have the opportunity to speak with John before he went back to prepare him a little bit, because it's very unexpected. You don't really understand how much you've been changed.
I think the best way to put it is it's kind of recalibrated my compass. What I've been working for seems so unimportant on the scale of things. I got home. We landed actually. So I landed, I'm flying back home, landed in Miami. I have to go through customs. I had to wait 2 hours in line for customs. Any other trip that would have happened, I would have been pissed and impatient. I had a smile on my face because I'm back in the United States of America.
And when you walk, the number one thing that people experience when they get into the airport, when they land in the U.S. is they can't believe how clean the air is. You forget you're here for a week or two and you take your first breath walking outside the plane and it's like sterile. It's startling. And the second thing you notice is people complaining that their bag didn't show up on time or that their flight is maybe delayed or what have you. And you've just been sitting with people who are cooking over an open fire flame with smoke and just unbelievably uncomfortable and not one complaint. And so there's this incredible culture shock when a lot of our team members come back, as John experienced.
Drove home. I pulled into my house and I sat out in front of my house and I lost it. I was a good 5-7 minutes. I just sat out there. For the first time in a very long time, I was grateful for the place I was pulling into. It's changed my perspective on a lot of things. I in areas I used to be impatient. I'm noticing I've become more patient in. It'll be interesting to see how long that lasts, because it's so easy to fall back into the natural thing of, you know, everything that you're doing in life. And here we are at a conference, you know, and I was actually thinking this morning, we were listening to one of the keynote speakers and just looking around, and it's, you're looking at all this technology perspective, man. I'm literally counting the dollars that a piece of lighting equipment that's hanging above my head costs, and thinking to myself how many days of work that is for one person down in these villages that we serve in Guatemala. It's just, it's perspective shifting.
Most people have some sort of reverse culture shock, and it's disturbing. For me, the first time I came back from India, I had had that training, but even with that, I was very disturbed by this. In fact, I couldn't talk about my experience for 3 months. And I'm a professional keynote speaker. I mean, I could not put into words how this had affected me. It was just so deep and so beyond words. And so I really struggled with how to communicate my experience, because what happens is you come back and people say, hey, how's India? How's Guatemala? Mm. Like, how's your vacation?
Right.
And it's so hard to put a face on the experience and the children that you've served, to describe your feelings. It's just, for most, it's pretty overwhelming. And so I had some excellent training coming back, but I needed more. And I actually went and reached out to our cultural trainer who trained us in India. And I asked her, I said, you know, I need to do something. Like, tell me, help me understand what I'm going through and what to do with this. And so I described some of what I was going through, and she said, oh, you feel anxious. And I said, yes. And she said, you feel this incredible weight on your shoulders. And I said, yes. And because, Dave, I was having these flashbacks, these flashback experiences. Like, I would smell, like, I would be at a campfire, you know, in one of these church camps, and I'd be singing, and the wind would shift, and a puff of smoke would hit me in the face, and boom, I'm back to India with open fire cooking inside their homes. I mean, these flashback experiences were happening 10, 12, 20 times a day for me for months. I mean, I couldn't escape it.
Sean wasn't the only one having flashbacks. Here's director Neil Galarte.
And so the other day I was looking at the footage, and when I watched it, it took me right to that second. It literally felt like I was looking right at her again.
Reverse culture shock or not, the crew had a full schedule with more flights planned, more interviews to prep for, and as the old saying goes, the show must go on. So back at home, it was time to kick off the crowdfunding. So here's John Dennis to not only talk about the funding, but to talk about executive producer Chris Kermitzos.
So one of the things I admire about Chris is, you know, when he gets this idea, he locks into it, you know. And The Messengers was this idea that he committed to, like, wholeheartedly. I don't think he knew what it would take financially to put together this film. It's not a film that's recorded with iPhone. I mean, this is, we're out with cameras that are expensive. We're, you know, you're lugging these around the world essentially. And it takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of time. It just takes a lot of resources. And, you know, I don't think he really knew what it would take to create this film. And so, you know, he's a new father, him and Katie, they're new parents, and they've got this child. And of course they've got to consider, you know, we have to plan accordingly. We have to be responsible with finances. So I know he had a budget, and that budget was quickly decimated. I mean, he flew past it, and he still continued to spend money on this film. So I'm really hoping that with a crowdfunding campaign, people believe in The Messengers enough to support it and to help create this film, to help make this film a reality so that it can be put into the world and so that it could make an impact in other people's lives, so it can inspire people to share their own message in this wonderful medium that we call podcasting. I can't imagine what it's like to have this this deep drive and desire to push on. And, you know, come to this realization that, like, holy crap, we're going to run out of money. Like, we don't have the resources to put this together in the way that we need to put this together. So I'm really hoping that people find a way to support this film.
As I record this episode, we have less than a month to raise the funds, and we're just a little over halfway to our goal. We really need your support. And if you think, well, my $5 or $10 won't make a difference, I'm here to say it would. All you have to do is go to supportthemessengers.com and chip in today. It is hugely appreciated. Today's episode featured clips from Sean Smith of nowisthetimeformissions.com and themobilepro.net, as well as John Dennis, who runs the Podcasters Hangout, which is Facebook's largest group dedicated to podcasting, and director Nia Galarte of Wild Style Media at wildstylemedia.net. Our website is themessengersdoc.com. Hear all the episodes by going to themessengersdoc.com/podcast. I'm Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting.com asking you, what's your message? In the next episode of The Messengers, lack of sleep, dirty hotels, and a mountain of stress start to take their toll on the team.
Because now you put yourself over the film.
Myself into the film so much, so committed, so deep that I'm even bringing my...
Can these award-winning filmmakers hold it together? Subscribe in iTunes and get the episodes the minute they are available and find out.